I am Patrick Eos, National President of Fraternal Order Police. This is the Blue View.
Well, Joe, thanks for coming back on the Blue View podcast. First, let me just thank you for being such a strong voice for America's law enforcement. Fraternal Order Police is certainly amplifying the frustrations of our members and the challenges for our profession. You do a great job with it, so continue. Great to have you as part of our team. Joe, most of our members know who you are. Most of our viewers know who you are. But for those that might be tuning in for the first time, give a little bit of your background.
Yeah, sure. My name is Joe Grimaldi. I'm the National Vice President of Fraternal Order of Police. I've been a police officer now for almost 19 years. I know it may seem like it couldn't possibly have been 19 years, but it's gone by in an instant. I started my career with the NYPD. I did 3 years there. You know, I was living in a shoebox apartment, the type that's so small when you open your bedroom door, it hits your bed. Decided that wasn't really what I wanted for my life, so I transferred down to Houston a little over 16 years ago. The rest is history. You know, I've been a Houston police officer for 16 years. I'm an active lieutenant. I still work night shift. So I only got up like a half hour ago. So excuse me if I'm drinking my coffee during this podcast, but that caffeine keeps me going. But got involved in my local lodge at a young time in my career and kind of climbed the ranks through there. After I was president for a period of time, I got elected to the national office here at the FOP, and the rest is history. It's been a wild ride. It's been a great ride, and it has been the honor of a lifetime to, you know, be a part of the FOP and be a voice for law enforcement, because I think what we all really try to do in leadership positions here within the FOP is just give a voice to our brothers and sisters who are pushing a patrol car every single day. And I want them, when they see their FOP leadership on the news, to just say, damn, that's exactly what I wanted to say. I'm so glad they're saying that. That's exactly what was on my mind. They are in tune with the issues that are impacting us, and that's what's most important to me. And I think we really are, because not only are we seeing our media mentions through the roof, not only are we the number one voice for law enforcement with all the statistical data to back it up, more importantly, we're hearing from the members that are saying, thank you for bringing our issues forward. Thank you for talking about this, because I wish I could, but I can't for fear of reprisal.
Yeah, Joe, it's a missing element that our organization had for a while. And as a result, we allow politicians to become the voice of law enforcement. Fraternal Order Police has taken it back, and you do an excellent job with it. Can keep up the great work. Joe, I want to talk about something that is that's tragic. It's a travesty that we have not been able to wrap our arms around this, and we're gonna dive into it a little bit. But as you know, and as I for our viewers, you know, Fraternal Order Police operates off of a federal grant from the Department of Justice. We call it Blue Alert. There's a longer title, but summarize it as Blue Alert, where we track the amount of law enforcement officers across this country through a pretty powerful search engine that allows us to determine how many law enforcement officers are shot in the line of duty. Last year, we sounded the alarm. When we finished 2022, we sounded the alarm, saying this is a tragedy. It's never been worse than it is right now. We were looking at 330 officers that were shot in the line of duty. 60 or so passed away from that, and even more as the ambush attacks were on a rise. And we were upset last year. This year is much worse. We see a trajectory now that is beyond comprehension. We're looking at 378 officers were shot last year in the line of duty. You know, thankfully, advancements in medicine and ballistic technology, we haven't seen as many officers die from these being shot. But what we are seeing is an increase in the amount of officers that are being ambushed. And so that report is out, and I thank you for joining us today to talk about those numbers. I know it's something you're very passionate about, and go ahead and give me your thoughts. That's a huge number. We see this trajectory since the day we started collecting this data. It has never been as bad as it is right now.
Yeah, no, you're completely right, and it's absolutely abhorrent. I mean, this is a stain on our country. It's an embarrassment to our country. And for whatever reason, this isn't making, national headlines every single week, and it should be. We are not some third world country that we should just accept the fact that our brave men and women who put a uniform on every day do it with a target on their back. I mean, this is insane. 378 police officers shot last year. For reference, that's a 60% increase since 2018. 60%! There is a police officer shot in this country once every 23 hours, and nobody's talking about it but us. And we are sounding the alarm. We are making it clear to people that we cannot carry on like this. And every single officer knows it. They know that they're going to work with a target on their back. And people always ask me, well, why do you think this is? Well, gee, I don't know. Maybe it's because we've treated police officers like scum for the last 10 years in this country. And we've made them out to be the enemy. We've eroded the legitimacy of police officers. And we no longer hold criminals accountable for their actions. You know, years ago, if you shot at a police officer, I mean, you're looking at decades in prison. And now it's just like, hey, slap on the wrist, get right back out there, do it again, pal. It's completely ridiculous. And, you know, a lot of people say, Joe, oh, man, you seem so angry about this. Well, first of all, it's passion. And people who don't know passion confuse it for anger. But second of all, yeah, I am a little pissed off, too, because these are people. These are fathers, sons, mothers, daughters who are being shot. So I shouldn't be passionate about that. And my favorite in all of this is when you get academics who sit their asses safely behind a desk in their, you know, ivory tower with their tenure, who have nothing to worry about in life, saying, well, it's not really that bad. There's not really a war on cops. I mean, give me a break. You don't ride in the patrol car. You don't know a damn thing about what's going on in the streets. You live, you know, protected behind your gates. You don't have a clue. Meanwhile, our officers are kissing their families goodbye, not knowing if that's the last time they're going to say goodbye.
Yeah, Joe, no doubt we're in a dangerous time. And I think it's interesting. I've done a number of interviews where I've had academics that argued, saying that these numbers really don't tell a true story. I'll point something out. Okay. And that is that if we had maybe one or two of these academics that were targeted, we'd probably be having congressional hearings about it because it would be a tragedy. And as a matter of fact, I'll go a step further. If we had even a fraction of the amount of officers that are being attacked simply because they've chose a career of public service and being targeted, if it was any other profession, there'd be an outcry. But somehow law enforcement officers, it's as if we are expected to take this risk and not appreciate just how bad this situation has gotten.
Yeah, I mean, imagine for a moment, if you will, if this was journalists. I mean, my God, there would be 10 new laws passed within the next week. We have to protect our journalists. We have to make sure they're not attacked. But meanwhile, officers being shot every day and there's not a peep. And you know, the sad thing is, we have legislation in place that would help for these attacks on law enforcement. It's called the Protect and Serve Act. It would make it a federal crime to knowingly assault a police officer, so we could take it out of the hands of these rogue DAs who give everybody a sweetheart deal. And instead, these guys would be looking at federal time, day for day time. So you know that if you shoot a cop, if you assault a cop, you're looking at 20 years in prison. You think that wouldn't have a deterrent effect? I assure you it would. Because as soon as you start mentioning federal time to these dirtbags, they get real scared because they're actually going to be held accountable for their actions. And you know, while I'm on the topic of journalists, there was just an article the other day from the USA Today where they said police officers shot more people than they have in years past. And this just goes to show you how disingenuous the media can be and how so-called journalists can be. They just write a clickbait headline. It took her 30 lines in the article to get to the fact that, oh, there were a lot of police officers shot last year. She doesn't mention that it was historic, doesn't mention that shootings are up 60% of officers, doesn't mention 378 police officers shot. She also fails to mention that when officers do shoot someone, they're overwhelmingly over 98%, 99% armed with a weapon at the time. That's not in the article. She makes sure to mention that we disproportionately shoot black suspects compared to the size of the population that they make up, while at the same time completely failing to mention that black suspects commit violent crimes disproportionate to the population size that they make up, which would obviously put them in more contact with police officers in those dangerous situations. We also fail to mention in this article that the University of Maryland and the University of Michigan did a study on police-involved shootings and said that there were no racial bias involved, and that you know what really drives officer-involved shootings? Violent communities with violent suspects who are armed with weapons. So if we really wanted to get officer-involved shootings down, and if we really wanted to protect officers as well, we should be focused on reducing violence in our communities. But somehow nobody wants to have this conversation. Instead, we'd rather just close down every business, create ghost towns, food deserts, financial deserts for communities that are plagued by crime, and not actually fix the problem.
Yeah, Joe. A few things. I mean, you've got a lot there. I want to point out the fact that that article that you're referring to, the one takeaway that should come out of the whole thing. Although you're right, the headlines were skewed in a completely different direction. One thing we can agree on in that article is this is dangerous times for our country. Whether or not you live within a community or a law enforcement officer, that is the underlying factor. You know, you mentioned journalists. Look, there are a lot of great journalists out there. This is not a slap on them, but I want to point something out. I want to show the lack of urgency and somehow the acceptance that law enforcement officers are being shot and being attacked at a level we haven't seen before, and it's acceptable. And I'll give you an example. You mentioned journalists. Just a few years ago, we don't have to go very far back. A few years ago, Congress actually had hearings and put together a committee to examine the amount of journalists that were being attacked. Do you know how many officers were killed? How many journalists were killed during that time or shot at during that time? Exactly. They did the same thing for poll workers at elections. Not to say that both of these are not important. The protection of journalists, protection of poll workers are vitally important to a free society. You know how many poll workers were attacked during that time, murdered during that time?
Zero.
But law enforcement officers, we have empirical data to show that law enforcement officers are being attacked at an alarming rate that is increasing, yet Congress has at their fingertips the ability to be able to pass the Protect and Serve Act, which would give, and just let me make it very clear, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions out there. Protect and Serve Act would say, basically says that there could be federal charges, anyone who purposely attacks a law enforcement officer because of their profession. Not that they will, because most of this is done within states state laws. But in some circumstances where it's necessary, it sends a good, clear message that we're not going to allow the attack of law enforcement officers. As you said, it's a stain of our society. If someone is so bolding that they are going to attack law enforcement, their responsibility is to protect and the communities that we serve. Just what chance does the average citizen have within those same communities?
Yeah, if this suspect is willing to shoot a cop, what are they willing to do to you and your family? I assure you they're at least willing to do the same. And it completely erodes the rule of law and the bedrock foundation that our country is built on of public safety to just allow. I mean, what society is going to survive that allows a war on its protectors and doesn't do anything to try to stop it? And, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around here because everybody loves to play both sides of the aisle and who's to blame, who's to this. You know, President Biden has not made a peep about this historic violence against law enforcement. He could condemn that violence. He could talk about officers being shot and say that we will not accept this in this country. You need to lead by example when you're, you know, the leader of the free world. People expect that of you. But there's plenty of blame on the Republican side too. House Republicans have not passed the Protect and Serve Act. They failed law enforcement by not following through. And there are an awful lot of Republicans who will back the blue and who say they back the blue and show up at funerals and pat you on the back. But we need action. We don't just need you to tell us how much you love us. How about you show us a little bit, pass the Protect and Serve Act, and at least let's try to get a handle on this. Those are two things right there we can do to solve this problem. We can also help by reducing violence in our communities, getting back to broken windows theories, holding criminals accountable for their actions. These are all solutions because you know what? Too often in our society right now in our country, everybody just wants to bitch and complain about the problem and not offer solutions. Well, the FOP, we're offering solutions left and right to this issue and this issue that is so important to us, and yet people don't want to listen. They don't want to follow through. And it's like, is it really that controversial to support police officers and try to get something in place that stops us from being killed? I mean, what the hell are we talking about here?
Yesterday, just yesterday, I had a meeting with a senator. We were talking about a completely different issue, but he spent a good bit of the time wanting to talk about the challenges facing law enforcement and the problems that we have of crime across this country. Recruiting, you know, a number of issues. And to his credit, I'll give him credit. He was very much concerned on all of these, and all of these are very important to our livelihood, to professional law enforcement. But I told him, you know, Senator, I have to tell you, all of those are great, and I appreciate all of your efforts that you're doing to try and help what we see as an existential crisis in law enforcement. But the bottom line is you're not going to fix any of these things unless we recognize that the vast majority of violent offenders are repeat offenders. In most communities, it's the same people we deal with over and over and over. And if you want to impact crime, you need to take the people who constantly prey on the people within the communities and take them off the streets. However, we've developed a process, a system, a period in time where we are ignoring these and somehow think that, in the name of social justice, that we're making our community safer. And the data is in. When will we recognize that we're becoming a much more violent society from the simple fact that we are not eliminating, we're not taking the people off the streets that prey on people within our community? If anything, we're emboldening them by not following through on a criminal justice system that was designed to be able to address these.
Yeah, well, I mean, it ain't rocket science. When people aren't held accountable for their actions, they're going to do them again. Or they're just going to actually increase the violence or the frequency with which they do these things because there is no consequences. And, you know, these revolving door criminal justice policies were sold by politicians and activists that they were going to help our underprivileged communities. You know, that's what these were going to do. When in fact, all they've done is decimate those communities. As I talked about earlier, you are seeing stores close, businesses close. They're creating financial deserts. No banks are opening in those areas. Food deserts. Supermarkets are closing left and right. There are no new supermarkets opening up in our urban communities as a result of all this violent crime. That's also taking away jobs and opportunities for the people that live there. I mean, Jesus, In-N-Out Burger just closed in Oakland. By the way, In-N-Out Burger is delicious if you haven't had it. You definitely need to try it. But In-N-Out Burger closed its only location in Oakland because crime was so bad there, because robberies are up 38%. Murders are up 36%. So they did it under the guise of we're helping our communities. And it'd be okay if they tried that and said, wow, this really didn't work. Let's get back on track. But no, they're doubling down. You think that these politicians and activists would hold their heads in shame for what they've done to these communities. But they're arrogant. They're smug about it and say, oh no, we need to carry on while these people are suffering. I mean, since the advent of all these revolving door policies over the last 4 or 5 years, yes, we've seen an increase in police officer shot. Do you know what the homicide rate for black men? It is up to 12 times the rate of any other American. How are we not talking about this and saying, whoa, 2 years in a row, we've had over 20,000 homicides in the United States. We haven't seen those numbers since the mid-90s. This is an abject failure. We have lost our urban communities for a generation, and it's time for us to turn it around, and we know exactly what we need to do. But you will hear this, just this constant refrain from the left that will say, you can't incarcerate yourself out of the problem. That's bullshit. Yes, you can. When there is a small group of people that are committing the crime, and we all know this in law enforcement, 95% of the people in the community are good, hardworking. They just want to try to get good lives for them and their families. The other 5% are the ones committing the crime. And guess what? If we lock them up and incarcerate those people, we see a reduction in crime. And I'll just give you the latest example. In San Francisco, they finally had enough of everybody breaking in these cars and stealing all their crap. So they set up surveillance. They started locking up the small group of people that were breaking into all these cars. And they worked with the DA's office to make sure that these guys were actually held after they were arrested. And they saw car burglaries go down by like 50% in 1 month. We know what works, people. You lock up the dirt bags, you throw away the key, and we have safer communities.
Yep. No question. Absolutely. Absolutely. You touched on a lot of points there that are important to the quality of life within communities, starting off with the financial and food deserts. You know, what is the stability within a community? You know, what makes a community stable? Well, obviously, it's a good law enforcement presence. It's a good, you know, public safety presence. But in addition to that, it's all of the services that are necessary for a good quality of life. When you eliminate the law enforcement perspective, a portion of that, the safe community part of it, the rest of it goes away as well. We're really not helping anyone. Absolutely couldn't agree with you more. There are a certain small segment of people that are the ones that are creating the out of control crime. Joe, just one thing, and I want to wrap it up with this. We've seen over the last few years, we've seen cities that try a number of failed experiments. Those experiments are that they are going to try and approach crime in a different way. And look, we're all for finding innovative ways to be able to make our community safer. I mean, the very powers that we have as law enforcement officers are directly related to that trust in a community. This is a partnership. It's something that we should be working together on in every community across this country. But what we're seeing, and you pointed out, and there is a silver lining here, and you know, when you look at crime in cities, it is obvious that a number of cities, a number of large urban areas that are recognizing that the path that they've taken has not been a positive path for their cities. And they are reversing course and they're fixing some of these problems. Now, I've had a lot of people argue, and I'm sure that you have heard it as well, that we should be holding them accountable because they're the ones that put us in this position to start with. We should not be making it hard for people to do the right thing. History will record who got this wrong in time. But really what's important now is how we move forward with it. And it's very encouraging to see that a number of cities are now reversing course and recognizing that some of these policies are really detrimental to the quality of life within their communities. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, I think we need to get back to a time where politicians are listening to the subject matter experts. And guess what? When it comes to crime, that's us. And, you know, I would encourage any FOP leader, even if your elected official got it wrong the last time, if they're coming to you and they want suggestions, sit down at the table and give them your expert suggestions on how to solve this problem. And make sure you're at the table and a part of it. Because, you know, there are a lot of great police chiefs, but there's a lot of bad police chiefs out there, too. And you need to make sure that they're not just going to their chiefs who are beholden to them for their job for these decisions to be made. You want to be in that room. You want to be directing the solutions to the problems because the ones that are out there working the streets, we know what works. We just have to make sure that our voices are heard. And I would tell anybody who's not a police officer, if you're living in your communities, make sure you are really plugged into what is going on locally with your elected officials. I think so many people, and you know, as we ramp up to a presidential election, that's all anybody's going to talk about. And they're going to talk about the presidency, or they're going to talk about their, you know, senator race or the Congress race. And those are all important things. But spend some time on your local races. Research who's running for city council or for DA or county executive or however your government is structured where you live. And make sure that you are voting for people that share the same values as you. Forget about the R and the D at the end of their name. Look at, are they standing on a platform, a bedrock platform of public safety? Because that is what our communities are built on. Without a platform of public safety, nothing else is going to work. Businesses are not going to thrive. Schools are not going to be safe. It starts with public safety. So make sure you're doing your research, spend the time, and I promise you, you will see the benefit locally quicker than you will on national level.
Thank you, Joe. And so let's bring it back to where we started, and that is the attack on law enforcement. It's not that long ago that Congress, or at least in the House, passed the Protect and Serve Act through the House with only just a couple of no votes. It was almost unanimous. How did we go from 2017, 2016, 18 to where we are today with not able to even get a vote in the House or the Senate? This kind of defies logic. So what we need to do, and we'll wrap it up here, and I'll let you chime in with it as well. We need our members, we need our viewers, our listeners to call their congressman, both in the House and the Senate, and tell them it's time to recognize there is empirical data to show that law enforcement officers are being targeted simply for the color of their uniform because they have chosen a life of public service, and that something needs to be done, and it starts. It starts with passing the Protect and Serve Act.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, if you're watching, contact your congressman, contact your senator, and say, we had 378 police officers shot last year in this country. What are you doing about it? Pass the Protect and Serve Act. Protect our police officers. You know, spare me the, you know, back the blue, pat on the back, but you're not really there for us when we need you. So I would encourage people, reach out, please become involved, make sure that they hear your voice, because ultimately that's what's going to make these politicians finally act and try to protect. You know, they should be doing it anyway, because we're putting our lives on the line every single day to protect them too, by the way, and to protect the community. The least they could do is pass this law, and so far they haven't done it.
Well, Joe, thank you. Thank you for your passion. Thank you for being a strong advocate for the voice of law enforcement. A very key role of the Fraternal Order Police is for our members to see that that we are not only working in Washington and to make things to make their voice heard to the, in the halls of power, but also that the public is hearing as well. You do a great job in that. I appreciate all you do. To our viewers and listeners back back home, thank you for tuning into the Blue View Podcast. Well, we talk about the issues that are so vitally important men and women who suit up and show up every single day and make a difference in the lives of people we serve. Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To get the latest from the National FOP, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at GLFOP and on Instagram at FOP National. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.